You've just tuned into Outdoor News Radio, a weekly showcase of the top outdoors writers and experts in Minnesota and across the region. I'm Outdoor News Managing Editor Rob Dreeslein, and I'm honored to have you join us for the next hour as we break down hunting, fishing, and natural resources topics affecting your ability to recreate in the Western Great Lakes and beyond. Our guests might challenge you occasionally, but we promise to entertain you while we're at it. Don't go away, because if you love this state's fine outdoor scene, you'll love Outdoor News Radio. This segment is sponsored by Ducks Unlimited. Join the thousands of volunteers having fun more than 3,500 times a year. Get involved at www.volunteerfordu.org.
Hey everybody, welcome to another week of Outdoor News Radio. Rob Dreeslein is happy to be with you. It's our final broadcast of 2025. I hope everybody had a great Christmas, a happy new year during the week ahead. We got a bunch of fun guests here with us again today. Sharon Staitler, the Bird Chick, will be with us for the second week. We will have Mark Johnson. He's the retiring director of the Lessard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council. Mark is going to join us, do a little exit interview with Mark, a longtime friend of Outdoor News. And then Chance Adams from Backcountry Hunters and Anglers will jump in. They've got their Icebreaker event going on toward the end of January, so he's going to give us a little preview of that event. I thought we'd kick it off, though, with Tim Spielman, the editor of Outdoor News, and kind of recap the year that was 2025. We always run our top stories of the previous year, and that's running here in an upcoming issue. Thought we'd kick that around with Tim. Tim, welcome. Good to see you. Happy New Year to you and yours this coming week.
Yeah, happy new year to you and yours as well.
The past year, we had a lot of stories. That's always kind of a fun piece that we do, the year in review, we call it. Where do we start? There were a couple of deer stories, huh? I think toward the beginning of the year, we had chronic wasting disease being declared endemic in several deer permit areas in the southeast. That hit me pretty hard because I happen to hunt in one of those DPAs. But that's a bit of a milestone, right? When the DNR says we're kind of throwing in the towel here on aggressive management of CWD.
Yeah, endemic is a scary word no matter where it is.
Yes.
Whether it's deer or the human population, but it did seem that way. It'll be interesting to see where we ended up last year in terms of prevalence. We talked about that last week, too. I don't know. I mean, what else? You wonder what else they could do. Funding, you can't, there's not unlimited funding for it.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
You've only got so much personnel. You hit the spots where you think you're doing some good. And that's basically what it boiled down to was we've gotten to a point where we'd be better off to try and contain it here and, you know, battle it on these other fronts in a more aggressive way and with the resources that we have. And I think that's what it came down to, which is sad, but, you know, you can only do so much. And I think everybody knew right away that when it came to CWD, just looking at it from all we got to do is look across the Mississippi and the St. Croix and see that at least on the front end, we tried to do what we could, and we're still not in a real bad position by comparison.
I agree with everything you said. I just worry that, you know, eventually these DPAs are going to be 40-50% prevalency rate, and then it's going to leach into the adjacent DPAs, and before you know it, you got something that looks like Southwest Wisconsin. That's what I'm worried about, but I hope that's many years away. And like you say, you can't just keep dumping money in it. There's something positive. Jimmy Hauptmann won the old federal duck stamp again. I'm almost tired of including that in our top 10 list every year, Tim, but the fact is those guys are amazing. Him and his two brothers, what if they won it a total of 16 or 17 times?
Yeah. I think so. I saw that on the list. And I was trying to remember. Jim tied his brother, I think, right, for like the fifth or sixth.
Well, I think they were tied, Tim. And with this, he's now the leader, the sole leader.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure they argue about it all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, you're right. It does seem like a broken record sometimes for those of us who remember records. But Jim, all of them, their artwork is just generally so head and shoulders above everyone else's. I mean, the judges who have any knowledge of wildlife art must be looking at the entries and going, oh, there's a Hauptmann. And I'm not even an art connoisseur, so to speak, but I think I could pick out a Hauptmann from the crowd too.
Yeah, it's pretty distinctive. You and I are, you know, have been monitoring it for a long time. You know, I had Jim on and we talked to him after the win, and I was really impressed with how hard he works to create that. You know, it doesn't just fall out of his head into his hand and onto the canvas. Mm-hmm. He really does work hard at researching birds and photographing them, and it's really a full-time job creating something like that. And I'm glad to see someone who works as hard at it as him and his brothers succeeding.
And it's cool too, I'll say this, that those three brothers are really big into outdoor activities, hunting wise.
Oh, you bet.
Which is really cool to me. And I'm sure it's super beneficial to what they do. Mm-hmm. If you're going to be doing something like that, you got to spend time in the outdoors, and there's no shortage of it with them.
Those guys hunt. They are hardcore waterfowlers, and they're big game hunters too. They get together and they go out and they like hike in the mountains. They're all lean as can be, and they run around the mountains chasing elk. They're definitely serious outdoorsmen. A couple of federal stories, Tim. One, this one was important to me. We've seen a lot of federal agencies, especially at the beginning of the year, the DOGE cuts really hit National Park Service, Bureau of Land Management, Fish and Wildlife Service, a number of agencies. We've had cuts before in federal agencies, but I don't know if I've ever seen the volume that we saw this year. The other thing is the feds declaring that they're they were working on a gray wolf management plan. The Trump administration, the Fish and Wildlife Service saying, no, we're not going to do it now, which potentially opens the door to delisting, I believe. Right. Do I have that right?
It should. I don't think that national planning precluded the possibility of delisting being attempted one more time, but it certainly made it seem like that because, well, we're going to come up with a plan over the next, how many years was it, 2 or 3, that makes everybody happy, which we know it's never possible. So I think scrapping that, and honestly, I look at some of those things and it just seems like a colossal waste of time to try and bring together people who aren't even close to on the same page and think you're going to come up with something that makes everyone happy. That being said, the timing would be right for if the federal legislators are going to move that direction, they should be doing it now. But then again, you never know. I mean, wolves have been delisted how many times in the past 20 years, 3, 4, something like that. And there's usually a court that overrules it. And here we are back to federal management in a state that has what's the wolf count now?
Yeah, 3,000, let's say.
Yeah. So where it's been for years and years, and the state should be managing that species, but it is not. And it's the saga continues. But I think we got rid of something that wasn't going to do us much good in the long run.
Outdoor News Radio, Rob Dreisein and Tim Spielman, kicking off our final show of 2025, recapping some of the big stories from the past year. A couple more deer stories, Tim. One, the 3A and 3B seasons are now one license. It might seem kind of small to a lot of people as someone who's hunted down there for many years and remembers when you had the buck hunt and then the doe hunt. It's been a long time coming that we've basically got this one season just happens to be split up now. That's a little different. The other thing is that the legislature, after years and years of talking about this, right? Good Lord, how many times have we reported and talked about it on Outdoor News Radio? They got rid of the Southern Minnesota Shotgun Zone. Yep. Now, that doesn't mean it's going to be a free-for-all next year because the counties can still opt out. And that's something that Outdoor News readers are going to want to read closely about next year.
Yeah, that'll be something. And I've been trying toward the end of this year, too, to keep it on people's radars because county boards are, and we've talked about it in the past, too, but county boards are looking at it. There's some deadline dates coming up early in the year. And if the county is going to opt out, so to speak, then it's going to happen soon. If people want to have a say in the matter, they should find out what their counties are doing in terms of collecting input. So that'll be something as we look ahead to the next to 2026 that'll be pretty interesting, I think.
Tim, another federal item, the Supreme Court decided not to review the Corner Crossing case, which means the lower court ruling stands. I think it affects like 8 states, Tim, where Corner Crossing is now legal in those states. Wyoming is one of them. Minnesota was not one of those 8 states. The rest of the country is still kind of in limbo. I guess state by state law exists. I wanted to include that just because that's a federal case we've been watching. It's been brewing for what, 3-4 years?
Quite a while.
Yeah. And I guess good to see the Supreme Court pass on it and say, let's move on. However, the fact that they didn't rule overall means part of the country's in limbo. Probably not the last we've heard of that issue, I'm guessing.
No, probably not. It's a big deal out there. I can't help but envision every time I think of that, coming up to this corner and then just, you know, holding my gun tight and taking a big leap and missing the corner. Do you ever get that picture in your mind?
Maybe well, not. These guys built a little ladder, you know.
Oh.
So they did not
leap. They didn't have to jump.
Well, we'll keep watching that one. Back to Minnesota. We had one of our native sons win the Bassmaster Classic. That was huge. Young guy, right?
Yeah, 22 years old. First, a rookie from Grand Rapids, Easton Fothergill, who a friend of mine actually knows a little bit from that circuit. He had a cool backstory, too. He had undergone brain surgery, I think, 2 years prior from Grand Rapids. I think we just said that. But anyway, I did see a list of participants in the Elite Series this year, and Easton's back on the circuit. So okay, him and three or four other Minnesotans, I believe.
Yeah, that next Classic's not too far away, just a few months. It's always in March. So which seems like an odd time of year, dead of winter up here. But in places where they hold that event, there's still some soft water, as they say. Wrapping up, Tim, we had another record turkey kill, I believe, for the second straight year. So it's Minnesota's a good place to hunt turkeys. We had some kind of honorable mentions, the forward-facing sonar debate. I would say it definitely heated up. It's something that's been simmering for a couple of years, and it seemed like 2025 was the year everybody was buying one, and it definitely jumped up. And then the DNR had a report on crossbow use, and you know, I see you also had one of our online opinions asking people if they were using vertical bows or crossbows, and by no means is that a binding, you know.
Right, it's not super scientific, no.
But nonetheless, I mean, more than half said they're using crossbows, and that's consistent with what we're seeing in other states, like Wisconsin and Michigan. So crossbow, people are loving them.
Yeah, I thought that was reflective of what I've been heard and what you see in the harvest and what surveys say. So it had to be pretty close. It's almost an even split.
Well, most of those issues, fortunately or unfortunately, Tim, I suspect, will be back with us in 2026. So
there seems to be some carryover always.
Yeah. Well, good stuff, Tim. Happy holidays again to you. I hope you have a happy new year, and we'll talk to you in 2026.
Yep. Happy 2026 to you.
All right. Tim Spielman, editor at Outdoor News. We are going to break. I think we'll have Sharon Steidler with us for the second straight week, so don't go away. More Outdoor News Radio after these messages.
The journey to deer camp only comes once a year, and we know you've got plenty of heavy, bulky gear to pack. Introducing the new Diverge case from Plano. Lightweight where it counts, tough when it matters. Ultra durable and lightweight thanks to a tough shell exterior with high-density foam that delivers molded protection without the bulk. And a drop zone lid tray provides a convenient workstation for keys, cartridges, and coffee during pre-hunt prep. The new Diverge series cases from Plano. Don't just kinda be ready, be Plano ready.
By the numbers, here are the costs of not having Onyx fish. 400 extra holes drilled, 100 wasted ice miles, 20 needless gallons of truck, snowmobile, or ATV gas, 5 trips trying to catch a walleye where they don't live, 3 days of vacation you'll never get back, 2 wrong turns that cost you an extra hour at prime time, and one last time you'll waste dollars and effort. Onyx fish, $34.99 per year, 10 Midwest states, countless ways to catch more fish.
Retirement can be scary, but only if you're not prepared. That's why AARP created thisispretirement.org. Because unless you've already retired, you're in pretirement and you still have time to plan. Learn about retirement savings options, potential tax breaks, and how you can build savings over time. Visit thisispretirement.org for free resources to help you customize your action plan and feel the retirement fear disappear. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Attention hunters, have you bagged an impressive whitetail buck this season? Then show it off at the Outdoor News Best Buck Contest, sponsored by Federal. The contest runs through January 2026. Bow, rifle, or muzzleloader, all hunters are welcome. Visit OutdoorNews.com for a shot at great prizes and bragging rights. Click the Best Buck Contest link atop the page at OutdoorNews.com to learn more, enter, and view official rules. That's OutdoorNews.com.
If you're hunting deer in Minnesota or surrounding states this season, be aware that deer carcass movement restrictions are in place in Minnesota. You cannot move whole intact carcasses out of CWD management zones or into Minnesota from other states, and only certain parts of your harvest can be transported. If you're heading to a licensed taxidermist from hunting out of state or in a CWD zone, there are regulations for you too. Visit mndnr.gov/deerimports to learn more. That's mndnr.gov/deerimports.
Smokey the Bear.
Then you know why Smokey tells you when he sees you passing through. Remember, please be careful, it's the least that you can do.
Don't play with matches, don't play with fire.
After 80 years of learning his wildfire prevention tips, Smokey Bear lives within us all. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com. And remember,
only you can prevent wildfires.
Brought to you by the USDA Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Everybody, welcome back. Outdoor News Radio. I'm Rob Dreisline. Thanks so much for tuning in. Hope you like the chatter here. If so, check us out online at outdoornews.com or call us at 800-535-5191. You can subscribe to our print or digital versions that way. I hope everybody had a Merry Christmas. As promised last week, Sharon Staitler, the bird chick, was with us. So you can follow her on Instagram and other social media platforms. I said we'd have her on either side of the Christmas holiday, and she's back. Sharon, thanks so much for joining me again. I hope the holiday treated you well.
It did. I have absolutely no idea what day it is, and I'm chock full of cheese.
that's awesome. Yeah, I think we all feel that way. But there's still some good bird watching to be had out there. Talk to us a little bit about winter bird watching. What are your priorities? I think for a lot of people, it's kind of about going up north and maybe trying to see some interesting owls. Is that kind of at the top of your list?
Yeah, you can go up north. I actually enjoy kind of poking around the Twin Cities metro area and to see where I can find owls. You're not successful all the time, but if you look enough, you get fairly successful. So I especially like to look for conifers or cedar trees or just really tight clumps of conifers. And then I'm always looking at the ground. Do I see anything that looks like chalky white paint flecked on the ground? Then I'll start to look for pellets. And if I see that, I'm like, oh, there's got to be an owl roosting here. That's how I find quite a few. That and angry chickadees have led me to quite a few. And owls of all sizes. The tiny saw-whet, eastern screech. I once found a long-eared owl just by one chickadee, just giving one angry call. So yeah, I actually look for owls everywhere I go this time of year.
Okay, there's a lot to decipher there. You look for their waste products. That mm-hmm. white chalky stuff is their nitrogenous waste, I believe. And then the pellets are actually everything that they can't digest from the creatures they eat, the bones, the fur, and they create a pellet, a tight little pellet with that, and they spit it up. I've picked up owl pellets before. I remember in science class.
Oh, yeah.
Taking them apart and finding them with my dad. They're pretty cool. Sometimes you find, complete animal skeletons in them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And wild ones are so much more fun than the ones that you buy or do in a classroom, because the classroom ones come from places like the Raptor Center. And so there, the diet is pretty much regularly mice, rats, that kind of stuff. Whereas in the wild, I had a pellet once that had the jawbone of a bat. It wow. had a beak of a house finch. There's some really great books that will help you identify the bones.
Okay. Yeah. A variable diet. Okay. Now you mentioned the chickadee thing. How do mm-hmm. chickadees lead you to owls? How does that work? They're out there scolding the owls. Why would a chickadee do that?
A lot of people associate crows with mobbing an owl or an eagle or a hawk because they're just so big and loud. Small birds do it too. And you just have to learn the language. So when you hear a chickadee going chickadee, dee, 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 and they're doing that D over and over and over and over, that is a sign that they see something they don't like. And then sometimes they'll just do a little chick, and those are all, I'm a highly agitated chickadee. And so it's probably even some chickadee profanity. And so when I hear that, I always start looking in wherever the tightest, darkest spot is. I start looking for the poop. I start looking for the pellets. And in the wintertime, owls have a tendency to stay in one spot. So that's why you can see all the poop accumulation. And usually when you find that poop accumulation, if you look up, chances are good you might find yourself some species of owl.
We have a lot of owls in the metro area. I mean, I hear them all the time. I hear mm-hmm. mostly great horned owls in my neighborhood, but I occasionally hear a barred owl also. This is a good area to presumably go see owls.
In the Twin Cities metro area, I have seen saw-whet, screech, long-eared, snowy, barred, and great horned pretty regularly.
What owls do we have from Canada this year, so-called eruption? Do we have great grays hanging around, hawk owls up at Saxon Bog? I believe as much as several weeks ago, you told me there were already a few snowy owls popping up.
Yeah.
What's happening there this year?
I don't think we're going to have as robust of an owl season as we did last year. I mean, usually when we've had a year of a lot of owls, the next year is a little bleak. We'll always have a couple of great gray owls up at Saxon Bog because they live there year round. We have some that nest there. Aiken County is actually another great spot. Hang out at the Boreal Forest in Aiken County. It is a highly underbirded area, and I've gotten many great gray owls there. The snowy owls, they're pretty consistent. They're already at the airport right now. I don't have high hopes for boreal owls this year because we had so many last year. I haven't heard of a northern hawk owl yet, but saw-whets have been seen around the Twin Cities. They're not going to be reported in eBird, but they're there. No one talks. It's like Fight Club. You don't talk about the saw-whet owl.
Okay. They're those cute little guys.
I've seen
I've seen them before. Great grays are really impressive looking. When people see a great gray, they're kind of shocked at how large they are. They're like our tallest owl, right? But not our heaviest, not our quote unquote biggest owl.
Yeah, they're kind of like a poodle. They can weigh less than a great horned owl, even though they look so much bigger. But snowy owls are the biggest heaviest owl if you go by weight. Yeah.
Yeah. Does eruption equal bad winter, or is it more food related? Because clearly we've got a more severe winter cooking here than we've had the past couple of years. And you said last year was a better eruption year.
Yeah. And sometimes eruptions are more about the breeding season was a great food year and a lot of chicks were produced. And then those chicks have to go somewhere in the winter. And so they fly down south to try and find food on their own. And sometimes they end up having to go further than they need to. But even like the great gray owl, like some of the owl eruptions that we've had with snowy owls and great gray, the summer before it was an insane prey year. And so the birds just went into breeding hyperdrive.
This is Outdoor News Radio. Rob Gerisline and Sharon Stadler coming off the Christmas holiday, talking a little bit about what kind of an owl year it is out there. That's a popular activity for birders this time of year is finding owls, especially some from up north that may be visiting Minnesota. You brought up chickadees beating up on or scolding, rather, owls, and people sometimes associating that with crows. You were telling me off air a little bit that crow roosting has become a big deal in urban areas now. What's that about?
That is one of my favorite wintertime pastimes. So crows have always been, have always had large communal roosts in the wintertime. And in the last two decades, they've kind of pivoted from doing this in rural areas to doing it in urban areas for a couple of different reasons. One, nobody shoots at them in the cities usually. And
hypothetically, yeah.
We're too busy shooting at each other. No. Right. But no, people leave the crows alone in the metro area. And then also there's that urban heat effect where buildings absorb the sun during the day. And so it tends to make metropolitan areas a few degrees warmer than in rural areas. And so crows will gather anywhere from like 20 miles away to form this roost. And you can have a roost be anywhere. I've seen them as small as 10,000 birds. I've seen them be as large as 40,000 birds. And you just here in the Twin Cities metro area, they typically follow the Mississippi River. Sometimes they'll roost over by the U of M campus. It's been in Loring Park. It's been in South Minneapolis. And you just what you do is as dusk is approaching, you can see all these crows. You can see the lines of crows. You just kind of follow it around, see where they go. Sometimes you do see great horned owls go through the roost to try and pop off a crow. And that's pretty cool because it sends the roost into disarray.
And that's why crows later decide to mob owls, right? Because owls will kill a crow now and then.
Yeah. And I mean, the roost is easy pickings. I mean, one of the reasons they roost together is, you know, it's you're less likely to be picked off by the great horned owl if you're one of 10,000. Sure. But this is also a chance for younger crows that don't have a mate yet to meet up with other crows and maybe form a new family group.
These crows, they're all piling in. What are they eating? I mean, are they foraging on trash?
Yeah, that's another reason that they come into the metro area is because we have an abundance of dumpsters. So a nice place to snack before you go to sleep and a nice place to have breakfast in the morning. I remember I lived in this apartment over in Uptown and sometimes the crows would pass over as they were leaving the roost. And one morning I'm having coffee and I look out and I see my neighbor out there in his pajamas throwing ice up into the trees at the crows who are cawing. And I open my window and I said, "Hey man, what are you doing?" "These crows, they're so noisy. I'm trying to get them to leave." And I said, "Close your dumpster."
Yeah, wow. What a concept. Sure. Crows, do they not migrate? Are there some migratory crows and then some stay here year round, or do they all stay here year round?
As far as I know, these are our regular crows. Now, some of the crows that we have roosting, they could be Dakota County crows, but we're not having the crow movement of they're going down into Indiana or anything like that.
Do any crows migrate south?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay. Yeah. Shame on me for not knowing that.
They might have a little bit of seasonal movement. Like I said, like I nest in Dakota County, and then in the wintertime, I fly into Minneapolis to roost in the evenings. But that would be the extent of it as far as what I've read about crow movement.
Gotcha. And we're talking strictly crows here. This is not a raven phenomenon.
Ravens do have wintertime roosts, but it's not anywhere to the extent that American crows
and have. And no urban ravens that I'm aware of, at least around here.
They're creeping in. Years ago on a Christmas bird count, I heard a raven. I wasn't believed. And then after that, they started getting it regularly up around Arden Hills. Okay. And in the last year and the last few years, too, ravens have been seen around Vadnais Heights.
Well, interesting. They're one of my favorite bird ravens.
They are cool.
Well, gosh, Sharon, I can't believe we're out of time here again. I'm sure you got some travel plans. Maybe next time we catch up, we'll talk about your we usually go south a little bit.
This year I'm going west. I'm going to go out to a bird festival I've never been to out in Morro Bay, California. It sounds like it's the new hot winter festival, so I'm super excited.
Have a great trip, and maybe we'll check in with you later, you know, this spring when it's warming up. We'll talk spring migration and find out how that trip went.
Sure. Or we can talk in February. Okay. Whatever you want, man. Whatever you want.
All right. That's our friend Sharon Staitler, the Bird Chick. Follow her on social media platforms, especially the Gram, Instagram. You can follow Bird Chick. Thanks so much, Sharon. Take care.
See you, Rob.
Let's grab a break. More of the broadcast after these messages.
Ice season is here, and when you pull your favorite fish up through the ice, make sure you finish it right. Chef Robert's Gourmet Breading Mix was created by a chef over 40 years ago who just wanted a better fish fry. Today, it's the same great flavor in a resealable 12-ounce bag. Perfect for your kitchen or the hot stove out on the ice. Three flavors, original lemon, pepper, and Cajun. Just wet the fish, coat it, and cook it. That's it. One step from hole to plate. Chef Robert's, when you catch your favorite fish, use your favorite breading. Visit www.chefroberts.com for more information.
Whatever you're hunting, be it small game, predators, gobblers, or big game, Henry Repeating Arms has a rifle or shotgun you can trust. With over 200 models to choose from, every Henry is proudly made in Wisconsin, backed by a lifetime warranty and supported by top customer service. From the squirrel woods to deer camp, there's a Henry for your hunt. Order your free Henry catalog today at henryusa.com. You'll also get a sheet of decals, the Henry Repeater newsletter, and a personalized list of local dealers. That's henryusa.com. Get your free catalog today and gear up for the season.
You fish the same waters year after year. But what if your next best fishing story is just a few miles away? Onyx Fish builds on 15 years of experience, giving hunters and adventurers a revolutionary angling tool to help you find new water, new access, and new fish. Find the right lake. Know the species, size, and abundance. Get expert local insight. Navigate to the right ramp fast. Then go fish in new lakes like they're your home waters. Don't chase reports. Make your own with Onyx Fish.
Is a trip to Alaska on your bucket list? It's time to dump that bucket and buy your ticket. And while you're there, fish the Kenai River with Jason's Guide Service. Jason is considered the best when it comes to catching Alaskan salmon, rainbow trout, and char. He's one of only a few guides that has the permit to fish in the Kenai National Wildlife Refuge, where the salmon are easy targets and the trout and char are plentiful. So cross that Alaskan fishing trip off your list and check out jasonsguideservice.com. That's jasonsguideservice.com.
The Outdoor News Foundation is dedicated to nurturing the next generation of outdoor enthusiasts. Through your generous donations, we provide youth with access to outdoornews.com, educational scholarships, and grants. Every dollar donated goes directly to connecting young people with nature and outdoor activities. Help us cast a legacy for the next generation of outdoor enthusiasts and conservation leaders. Visit OutdoorNews.com to get involved, learn more, and donate today.
If you're deer hunting in Minnesota this season, be aware of chronic wasting disease. Sampling for CWD is mandatory in CWD zones during the opening weekend of firearm season, November 8th and 9th. Be aware that deer feeding and attractant bans are in place.
Check online to see if your county is affected. Carcass movement restrictions are also in place. Dispose of your deer carcass locally and don't drive the disease. Learn more and check if your DPA has CWD requirements at mndnr.gov/deerhunt. That's mndnr.gov/deerhunt.
Hey everybody, welcome back. Outdoor News Radio. I am Rob Dreisline. Thanks a lot for tuning in to the program. I hope you like the content here. If you do, check us out online at outdoornews.com. You can subscribe to our print or digital versions there. Not too late to think about a holiday gift. Or you can give us a call at 800-535-5191. I want to chat now with a gentleman who I've known my entire tenure at my day job at Outdoor News. I tell you what, he's had a lot of jobs over the years, a lot of great jobs with some great organizations, and he is retiring from doing a remarkable job with the Lesar Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council. He's my friend Mark Johnson, and Mark, you officially retired January 9th. Well-deserved. Congratulations. We're going to miss you.
Thanks, Rob. It's been fun. Been a lot of fun.
Let's talk, I guess, a little bit about the position you're retiring from, the executive director post, is that correct, of the Lesar Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council. There's a four-person staff involved in making sure those funds get distributed properly. You told me that there's going to be another analyst added next year, so it's going to be a five-person staff. This council emerged from the passage of the dedicated funding on election night 2008, correct? Give us a little bit of that history.
Yeah, that's right. Actually, and it goes back further than that. Remember when the Right to Hunt and Fish Amendment passed?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
It was very shortly after that that Bob Lessard and Joe Dugan and some others sat down and said, you know, we need to look at a consistent funding source for our habitat in the outdoors for our state lands. And that was the start of the, I think at that time it was the 1/8 Amendment, and then it
3/16 for a while.
Yeah, then 3/16 for a little while. It was back to a 1/16, and
you might recall we called it the Missouri Plan for quite a few years in there. Yeah,
and because Missouri was the first one. Yeah, and that's really where it came from. And then later on, of course, the waters and or clean water and arts and parks and everybody kind of jumped in.
And that helped push it over the top. I mean, you know, that, like you say, we passed Amendment 2 in 1998, and it took 10 years to get the dedicated funding done. And one reason we got it done was because some of us don't like to admit it, but I mean, the arts and the clean water and the parks folks, that whole coalition was what helped get it done.
Yeah, everybody had a part in it. And now everybody's got to, hopefully, is going to see the benefit from it or is seeing the benefits from it. That's probably our biggest challenge of the whole thing is making sure the public realizes all the good stuff that's happening out there and has happened already.
Can you speak to that a little bit? How much money has been put in the ground as a result of the dedicated funding amendment, specifically to the Outdoor Heritage Council? We don't need to talk parks and trails, but how much money has gone through the council? And it's really, you guys have done a great job of really focusing on habitat. That was why we passed it.
Yeah. So the Lesar Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council makes recommendations to the legislature for funding from the Outdoor Heritage Fund, which is a portion of that larger legacy amendment. When I started in 2014, so the Minnesota laws of 2015 or the spring of 2015 was when the first bill passed that I had a privilege of walking through. And that was about a $97 million for that year, a little bit over that. This year, the recommendation the council is doing is for $189 million, almost, you know, it's so nearly twice that in 11 years.
That's annual? That's not biennium?
Correct. This is annual. So we're looking at somewhere north of $150 million a year at this point forward.
Why has it gone up? Is it because sales taxes have increased?
Yeah, the sales tax revenues have increased just because people are buying more.
Right.
And we have more people buying. Mm-hmm. And of course, the sales taxes have also been changed legislatively. You know, if a company in Nebraska sells you a product online and you're here in Minnesota, in Nebraska, the Nebraska company has to pay sales tax to Minnesota. So it's that the different changes in sales tax have increased that some too.
I mean, just doing some quick math, you can get to a couple $1 billion pretty fast, I would think, at that rate over 11, 12 years. And of course, Bill Becker was your predecessor. It goes back a few years before you took over as the leader of the council there. There got to be a pretty gratifying post watching dollars go directly into the ground, Mark.
It is. And it sometimes it gets a little frustrating, or it's never discouraging. It's challenging. Maybe that's the best thing to say, and not frustrating. And just because there's so much importance of these dollars and how they're used and that they're used correctly. You know, sometimes there's a, you may have an opportunity for a project manager to work on a project that is, you know, it's a good project, but holy smokes, it's way, way too expensive. So why do that? You know, sometimes mm-hmm. you got to say no. Mm-hmm. The other, at other times you may have a project that is less than good. It's just not habitat. It's more like landscaping or parks and trails. So right. in those cases, it's not applicable. It shouldn't be applicable with these funds either. And right. that's one of the things that the council has done really well, I think, is ferreting out those proposals and saying, okay, this is habitat, this is not. And the reason they're doing that is because they really have, over the years, taken their role within the purview of the constitutional language and within the statute. They've taken that so seriously about Good. These funds having to be used to restore, protect, and enhance habitat for Right. fish, game, and wildlife. I think it's about $1.8 billion has already been appropriated just over that. So actually in the ground at this time, there's probably about $1 billion that's been put in the ground. And that's because there's programs are always still open and, you know, sure. you've got a lot of work that's happening, hasn't finished yet.
It's a huge success story, and you've done a remarkable job, you know, leading the effort there. We should just point out the council is made up of, is there 12 people on the council? Sure. And what, the governor appoints some, the Senate appoints some, the House appoints some. They're on, what, 2 or 3 year terms? So you've worked with a lot of council members over the years.
Yeah, they're on 4 year terms, and they're always rotating. So mm-hmm. there's four legislators. There's one Republican and one Democrat, or one minority and one majority member from each of the houses. So we have two senators, one Republican, one Democrat, two representatives, one Democrat, one Republican. And that, so those are the four legislators. And then there are 8 citizens. Okay. And those citizens are 4 from the governor, 2 from the House, 2 from the Senate.
Okay.
And it's a real bipartisan, or I like to think of it as nonpartisan, because that's really the way they do operate. But there's a bipartisan approach to it, making sure everybody gets representation.
You listen to Outdoor News Radio. Rob Gerisline chatting with Mark Johnson. He is retiring after 11 years with the Lasard Sams Outdoor Heritage Council. He's done a bang-up job there. We found out who's going to be taking over the role, Christina Smitten. She started on December 17th already. You told me you're training her in on some of the nuances of the job. Your last day is January 9th. I presume you feel like you're leaving the job and the council in good hands, and looking forward to seeing some great work from the council in the years ahead.
Yeah, I do. I do think I'm leaving it in good hands. I think Christina will do fine, and she'll be a good director, and she's got a great staff behind her. The staff I'm leaving behind of Joe and Sandy and Tom are incredible. I could never have asked for anybody better to work with. I just love them.
And we should point out, this past election night, 2008, 25 years was the term for dedicating sales tax. That's going on 18 years ago, and there's already murmurs. We got to get this thing renewed in 7 or 8 years. Is that anything you think you might work on in your retirement, Mark? I gotta poke you and ask that question.
You know, that's one thing. It expires in 2034. That's the sunset. And that's one thing I've thought about is as the director of the council, you know, I'm a nonpartisan employee, so right. I can't do that kind of stuff.
Sure.
But as a retiree. Yeah,
as a civilian?
I would like to be involved in that. I think there's so much good that has happened and so much more good that can happen from the fund that I'd like to be part of seeing that move forward.
Yeah, the battle is getting it back on the ballot, I think, right? Getting it through the legislature. You don't have to answer that question right now if you don't want to, Mark, since you're still an employee. But I think you would agree that once these things are on the ballot, the public has supported funding mechanisms for the outdoors in Minnesota.
Yeah, if you look at, as an example, if you look at the Environmental Trust Fund, mm-hmm. You know, that last year went before yeah. went on the ballot. Last year, 2 years ago?
Yeah, it was last year, yeah.
Yeah, so that's a good example. You know, the public voted that back in just with incredible wave of support. So I'm hoping this will be the same way. I would think it would be, but you know, it's all about telling the story and telling about those incredible projects that have been done and how it's helped people.
Let's talk about Mark Johnson personally a little bit. You've had a remarkable career. You spent 5 years as a regional director for Rough Grouse Society. Mm-hmm. I first met you. You were, I think, the director for the Turn-In Poachers organization. And then mm-hmm. you were at MDHA, the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association, navigating that group with its big board of directors. I got to tip my hat to anybody who can do that. And then rounding it out here as director of the Outdoor Heritage Council. What a great career in Minnesota's outdoor scene, Mark. You must be pretty proud of that.
I've been really fortunate. I've been blessed to be parts of all of those organizations. And MDHA, I was there 15 years, and what a great organization. And same with TIP and Rough Grouse Society. They just, each one has had such a unique role in the outdoors, and I just really have been privileged to be part of that.
What are you going to be doing in retirement? I know you've got 2 kids, 3 granddaughters now. Going to spend more time hunting and fishing. That's what a lot of folks tell me when they retire from an outdoor career.
It's just the other day I was threading some new line on my ice fishing reels. So that might give you an idea of my media future. It'll be more time with the kids and grandkids, more time in the outdoors, more time with hopefully my wife, and I'll get a chance to partaking more things, traveling a little bit, at least within the U.S. here, looking at some of the things we haven't seen.
Do you have a favorite type of hunting? You were the Deer Hunters Association director. You have a dog? You a dog guy?
I am a dog. I have been. I don't have a dog. And I don't think I'm due for any anymore. No. But my son has poodle pointers now.
No.
So I'll be working with him with them. And so bird hunting is kind of one of my passions. I really like the rough grouse and prairie birds. Yeah. And of course, duck hunting is always, I've always enjoyed that. Deer hunting has been really fun. In fact, I went up this year up to Fertile and hunted with my nephew and great nephew and son and my niece's husband just on the farm and had a wonderful time. I took a couple of does, and boy, I tell you, I had buck fever like I hadn't had in years. It was so much fun.
Good. Thank you for all you've done on the outdoor scene through a remarkable career. Thank you for being a calm, reasoned voice leading that Outdoor Heritage Council over the years. That's what we need, right? Someone who's very practical and focused on the mission, which was all about habitat. You've done a bang up job there the past 11 years, and I really hope you enjoy your well-deserved retirement.
Thanks, Rob. If I can give an encouragement to the listeners out there, is that Lasard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council is made up of people, which we've talked about. There are 8 citizens on there. And we need other citizens to think about serving on that council and be willing to do that. It's a really, really important job. And it's that guidance from that council that's going to continue to keep these funds available and continue to keep them being spent in the right in the right realm of habitat. So if I can encourage anybody, it's think about getting involved. If you have projects locally, if you've got a local conservation group, think about getting involved and asking for funds. And if people want to know how, have them contact me or contact the staff. But, there's nothing more important than being involved.
Great way to round that out. Again, Mark, thanks for all you do. We'll stay in touch and enjoy the rest of the holiday season.
Thanks, Rob. Happy holidays to you.
Mark Johnson, retiring director of the Lasard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council. Let's break. More of the broadcast after these messages. By the numbers, here are the costs of not having onyx fish. 400 extra holes drilled, 100 wasted ice miles, 20 needless gallons of truck, snowmobile, or ATV gas, 5 trips trying to catch a walleye where they don't live, 3 days of vacation you'll never get back, 2 wrong turns that cost you an extra hour at prime time, and 1 last time you'll waste dollars and effort. Onyx Fish, $34.99 per year, 10 Midwest states, countless ways to catch more fish.
You took the first step and quit smoking. But even former smokers may still be at risk for lung cancer. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know about a new low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early. It takes only 60 seconds and could save your life. You took the first step, now take the next. Visit SaveByTheScan.org for a simple quiz to see if you're eligible and talk to your doctor about screening. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
If you're hunting deer in Minnesota or surrounding states this season, be aware that deer carcass movement restrictions are in place in Minnesota. You cannot move whole intact carcasses out of CWD management zones or into Minnesota from other states, and only certain parts of your harvest can be transported. If you're heading to a licensed taxidermist from hunting out of state or in a CWD zone, there are regulations for you too. Visit mndnr.gov/deer imports to learn more. That's mndnr.gov/deer imports.
Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, a nationwide group working to keep public lands in public hands so future generations can enjoy what we enjoy. Join the group that makes a difference. Check us out at backcountryhunters.org.
Ice season is here, and when you pull your favorite fish up through the ice, make sure you finish it right. Chef Robert's Gourmet Breading Mix was created by a chef over 40 years ago who just wanted a better fish fry. Today, it's the same great flavor in a resealable 12-ounce bag, perfect for your kitchen or the hot stove out on the ice. Three flavors, original lemon, pepper, and Cajun. Just wet the fish, coat it, and cook it. That's it. One step from hole to plate. Chef Robert's, when you catch your favorite fish, use your favorite breading. Visit www.chefroberts.com for more information.
Whatever you're hunting, be it small game, predators, gobblers, or big game, Henry Repeating Arms has a rifle or shotgun you can trust. With over 200 models to choose from, every Henry is proudly made in Wisconsin, backed by a lifetime warranty and supported by top customer service. From the squirrel woods to deer camp, there's a Henry for your hunt. Order your free Henry catalog today at henryusa.com. You'll also get a sheet of decals, the Henry Repeater newsletter, and a personalized list of local dealers. That's henryusa.com. Get your free catalog today and gear up for the season.
As farmers and ranchers, stewardship of the land comes naturally. You help keep water clean, improve the soil, and provide habitat for wildlife. But did you know conservation can also improve your bottom line? Learn more at conservationpays.org.
Welcome back, everybody. Outdoor News Radio. I am Rob Gerisline. Thanks so much for tuning in. Happy New Year to all our listeners out there this coming week. If you like the content of our broadcast, I'd remind you, check us out online at outdoornews.com. Our website's bigger and better than ever. You can also get that print edition delivered to your mailbox 52 weeks per year. You can subscribe at outdoornews.com or give us a call at 800-535-5191. Before we wrap up this week, I want to spend a few minutes with a educator who I've gotten to know pretty well the past year. He is the board chair for our very own Minnesota chapter of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, a group you hear me talk about quite frequently. They've got a big event coming up next month. We're going to talk about the BHA's Minnesota Icebreaker. Irish Setter is the big sponsor of the event. But let's check in now with Chance Adams. Chance, good to see you. Hope winter is treating you well, as well as the holiday season.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Rob. Yeah, the winter up north here has already been in full effect for about a month. So we got ice, we got snow. It's great.
Yeah, you're in the Bemidji area, aren't you? Where you're, like I say, you're an educator.
Yep. Yeah, I teach in Bemidji and at a charter school here. And then I live about 20 miles north of Bemidji.
I think dedicated listeners know about Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, but let's talk a little bit about the Minnesota chapter. What are you folks all about?
Yeah, here in Minnesota, we're a public land advocacy group. In Minnesota, we've done a lot of different things throughout the last 5-6 years, whether it's standing up for the boundary waters, whether it's fighting against chronic wasting disease here in Minnesota. We've partnered with the DNR to help educate hunters across the state. We've helped secure public lands for access, whether it's Lac La Parle refuge. So we've done a lot of different things, fence removals, duck house building, anything we can do to help promote public lands, access to public lands, and defend public lands.
Yeah, you folks were pivotal at the big public lands rally last May. That's the last time I think I saw you. Chance was down here for that. That was a great day, and it won't be long. You know, we're talking about a spring 2026 a public lands rally. But in between, let's talk about something that's definitely going to happen. That's this Icebreaker event. You folks are going to have this going up on Pelican Lake, the North Country Icebreaker at Breezy Point Resort. You've done this several times, and this is probably your biggest event of the year, isn't it?
Yeah, this isn't your typical banquet. This is more of a day that we get to celebrate Minnesota and celebrate our members, where it's actually a 2-day event. On the Friday before, we have like a potluck where we've had members bring wild game dishes to share. We get to hang out at the Fawcett House, this really cool historic building at Breezy Point. And then the next day, we've got seminars starting at 9 in the morning that go until about 5 o'clock that night.
And it's open to the public. Let's be, make this clear. Anybody, you don't have to be a current BH member to attend. Now, there is a fee. There are tickets for this. But the point is you want to try to recruit some new members and get people to attend this. And it's a great opportunity to commiserate with like-minded public lands advocates and have some fun out of doors in the middle of winter while you're at it.
Yeah, if you're not a member of BHA, you should definitely look into it and become a member of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. Just the defense of public lands, not only here in Minnesota, but across the nation. And yeah, at the same time, you don't need to be a member to come join this. And even if you want to come check out the seminars and check out what BHA is about, this is a great event to do that. The cost of the ticket is mainly for dinner. So we have a buffet that night, and then we've got all sorts of seminars, like I said, during the day, whether it's an ice fishing seminar, whether it's a spearing seminar, we have winter camping, we have a youth activity, we got a wild game cook-off. So there's a ton of fun stuff that we do throughout the day that's just awesome.
One more time, it's at Breezy Point Resort on Pelican Lake, north of the, of course, with the Nisswa area of central Minnesota. If folks want information, backcountryhunters.org/events. Otherwise, you can find a lot of information just on Facebook. Look up Minnesota chapter of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers on Facebook. You've been promoting it there. You've been promoting it in Outdoor News. Appreciate that. Hey, you got a great keynote speaker who's going to show up. Why don't you preview that, Chance?
Yeah, we got Hal Herring, who does the podcast and blast for BHA. He's going to show up. He's our keynote speaker this year. We have a storytelling aspect also, so that'll be exciting. And I think one of the coolest seminars that we have is we have a DNR panel on forward-facing sonar. So we have a doctor from the University of Minnesota who's going to come and speak about forward-facing sonar. We've got fishing guides, and we have the DNR there that are all going to have their perspective on forward-facing sonar and what that could mean for fishing in Minnesota in the future.
Yeah, it's a big topic, and it's here now. I mean, yeah. It's impacting fishing as we speak, so I tip my hat to you guys. I appreciate you guys tackling that with your members at this event. Hey, Wild Game Cook-Off. The National Wild Game Cook-Off at Rendezvous is a really big deal, a lot of fun. Minnesota guys have won it in the past. This is the event where you choose who's going to represent Minnesota, is that right?
Yeah, we've had dishes that range from pheasant and waffles. We've had traditional shore lunch type meals prepared. There's just a lot of great wild game dishes that these contestants bring in and try. Last year it was a mule deer wontons with a wild raspberry sauce, and it was just phenomenal. Yeah.
Well, one more time, the event is called the North Country Icebreaker. It's January 24th. There's some other festivities the night before on January 23rd. It's at Breezy Point Resort in central Minnesota. I encourage folks to check it out. They've got a great agenda. Again, you can go to backcountryhunters.org and you can see the complete agenda. They got Hal Herring coming in. Hal is a friend of mine. He's been on this show. We had a really nice interview with him in Outdoor News recently. Meet Hal, meet Chance, meet everybody else up there and attend this great event. Chance, good luck with it. I think you're going to have a great crowd.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a great turnout, and it's just going to be an awesome time to connect with other public land advocates that want to share their stories. And I think that's what we want to do in the middle of winter, is kind of just get over that cabin fever and get back into the swing of things.
So it's about 4 weeks out, the North Country Icebreaker up at Breezy Point Resort, backcountryhunters.org for more information. Chance, thanks for joining me, and have a great new year.
Hey, thanks again, Rob. I really appreciate it.
Chance Adams, board chair for Minnesota Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. I am out of time.
One more time, everybody. I hope you all have a great new year. It has been my great honor joining you on this station at this time every week for the past 52 weeks. I'll be back again in 2026. I'm Rob Driesline, signing off for Outdoor News Radio.
Missed a segment from this week's edition of Outdoor News Radio? You can hear a podcast of the complete program at OutdoorNews.com or via your favorite podcast streaming platforms. And for the rest of the story on the topics we cover here on the program, get yourself or a friend a subscription to Outdoor News. Just visit OutdoorNews.com. And don't forget to join us next week on this station to talk everything out of doors.